Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Neil Coulon, previous half hour, Reed Thorgrave, opening half hour, Dieter Kurtenbach in just a few moments, Kevin Franzen in the final half hour. But first, our play-by-play call of the day. The St. Louis Blues tie up the Stanley Cup Final at two games apiece.
Here's Carl Gunnarsson on the ice. Now to Pietrangelo with time. Wires the shot on. Rebound, they score! Ryan O'Reilly! Out of midair, swats it home. And the Blues take the lead again. 3-2 the score, 9:22 to go. Ryan O'Reilly, his second of the hockey game.
All right, the keys to that player, the key to that scoring play was the key to the game last night. Notice who took the shot. It was Alex Pietrangelo, defenseman. They took their defenseman and they put them into absolute attack mode last night. They were going forward the entire game, getting shots on net, going to the corner after pucks, not just pinching at the point. I mean, they were going in and after plays, and they had the Bruins pinned several times. That was also, it was in one of the few shots all night where Tuukka Rask left a big rebound, but it was also the kind of shot that does lead to a big rebound. And O'Reilly scored his second goal of the game. Later on, with about a minute to go, the Blues had an empty net goal. They won it 4-2 last night, and the series is tied at 2 apiece. And we don't know if Zdeno Chara will be able to play in Game 5. Took a puck to the face last night. You know, hockey players are tough, but, you know, let's be honest about it. Do they have the same toughness to stick to it and be there every day the way the suit does?
That's a good question.
No comment from the future voice of Shikellamy football, Matt Catrillo. All right, with that, we go to the coast. Bring in our good friend Dieter Kurtenbach to talk about the NBA Finals. Dieter, welcome back. It's always great to hear you on the other end.
Good to have me. Thanks for, I'm all discombobulated. I got off of a plane ride that seemed to take about 24 hours from Toronto, but back in California, ready for Game 3 and 4.
There you go. You and I both know the joys of travel.
Let's go with that.
Joys of travel. Oh, yeah. What airport are we at? No, that's not the one we need to be at. All right. When you look at the first two games, I know it's a finals, and you've covered finals.
Yeah.
Right? And this is only my perspective. Why does it feel like a couple of regular season games in February so far?
I don't know if it's that level, but I know where you're at. This has been weird. This has been abnormally weird for an NBA Finals. Usually an NBA Finals is extremely straightforward. You kind of know it's strength versus strength, and maybe we got a little bit of that in Game 1, but because of the injury level for the Warriors, and even for the Raptors as well, with Kawhi Leonard playing on kind of two bum legs, you just have peculiarities and rotations. You have a lot of feeling out, and I think that's maybe more than anything else because these two teams didn't go at each other full strength at any point in the regular season because the Raptors, you know, they just got Kawhi Leonard this year. It's an entirely different team when you get a superstar like that.
Right.
There has been a big feeling out period for the Warriors who feel very comfortable that they can beat any team, so maybe aren't as gung-ho about pregame preparation. And not that they don't do a tremendous amount of it, but they do allow themselves to kind of pick up bits and pieces and then adapt on the fly. Game one provided some of that, but it's a lot easier to feel a team out when you're at home. So when you're on the road, right, then it's just a discombobulated mess. And I think it's only probably going to get weirder from here. So it just doesn't feel like, you know, we know who. When you don't have Kevin Durant, things are going to be weird. When you might not have Klay Thompson, things are going to be weird. When you're throwing DeMarcus Cousins in, who, say what you will about DeMarcus Cousins, I think people know his name around the country, that just throwing him in willy-nilly, like, you're going to get some weirdness. And when you don't really know what the hell to expect out of your opponent going into game one of the NBA Finals, it's going to be weird. Yeah, it's super weird. I'm kind of enjoying the peculiarity of it all, but you're right. It does not, or at least from my vantage point, I was thinking about this before coming on, like, it doesn't feel like an NBA Finals. I don't know if it's February, but it's something quite different.
Well, at least I picked the latter part of the season.
Appreciate that. Yeah, when teams are starting to go for it a little bit.
Yeah. Now, I want to get to DeMarcus Cousins for a moment. It struck me in watching him at I thought he passed up some shots to give somebody else a better shot. Mm-hmm. It seemed like he was playing like a guy that, hey, look, I want to win a championship. I don't care about my numbers. What did you think of him getting himself back in, especially starting again?
Yeah, well, I don't know if the Warriors had much choice but to start him. So I don't know how much credit to give him in that regard. But for him to be in the position to where he can be relied upon to go 28 minutes in game two, it is a real testament to him. And I think it will bode well for him on the free agent market this summer, especially if he continues to play the way he played in game two. That injury was supposed to keep him out, and especially a big man blowing out your quad. Like, that's ridiculous that he's on the court.
Exactly.
I can't fathom it. And he's still limping around. I mean, he's not 100%. He limps around everywhere other than the basketball court, it seems. And his conditioning is not where it needs to be for the NBA Finals. And that could be something that we see become problematic for the Warriors later on in the series. Or it could break through. Maybe the rust has completely fallen off and he's ready to boogie now. But no pun intended. But
that's good.
It's one of those things where the Warriors weren't sure that he would play the way that he played, not just in making an impact, but in making the smart, team-centered decisions that you pointed out. They didn't know that that would happen. They honestly were actually wary of putting him out there, but they didn't really have a choice, and they were so pleased to see him make the smart basketball decision, because it's easy to overlook in the regular season. It's easy to just, you know, brush it off and say it's no big deal. But he hadn't played in the postseason. He played one game in the postseason. It was game one against the Clippers in the first round, the very first one. And he played poorly, honestly. And there were big issues regarding the game plan, because he wanted to go out and play like it was a regular season game, which basically meant he wanted to get his points. Mm-hmm. He wanted to make sure that he was making an impact in that way. And Steve Kerr, when Cousins went out, there was almost a sigh of relief from the Warriors coaching staff, because they weren't going to have to bang their heads against this wall trying to convince him to play the right way. But then, you know, you're down when Kevon Looney goes out. You definitely have to lean on him. When you look at how Jordan Bell played in game one, he was in but not impressive. When you look at how the Raptors are set up, you have to go with Cousins. You have to get a little something out of him. And for him to play a positive style of basketball and to not let his ego lead the way, the Warriors were happily surprised. And it bodes well for them in the rest of the series, because that's exactly what they need out of him.
All right, so Looney's out. Thompson might be out.
Yeah.
Durant might not play again.
Right. He might not wear a Warriors uniform again. Right. That's a very real possibility.
Let's get to the Thompson thing. First of all, I don't like the kick out or, you know, trying to get a foul that way. I mean, to me, that's an offensive foul.
Right.
What's the impact defensively when Thompson's not out there? Because, look, the offensive thing, look, the simpleton of the world can see he can shoot. Everybody knows that. I think you have to know hoops to know that Klay Thompson's a heck of a defender. So what does it do to their rotations when he's not out there?
Well, it makes it problematic to switch everything, because something that Klay does better than maybe any two guard in the NBA is his ability to switch on to big men. And they can trust him down in the low post if he gets switched on to Gasol. The Warriors want to make sure that they can swap everything on the perimeter, but that usually leaves tough situations down in the post. And if they're not able to switch everything, that gives the Raptors an upper hand in terms of scheme, because it allows them to run a lot of pick and roll with Kawhi Leonard. And Kawhi Leonard, we saw what he did to Looney. That dude is strong. You're going to need to put three bodies on him in order to stop him from getting to the hoop. It's a big issue. The Warriors 18-0 run, you could almost attribute a good chunk of that to them taking Andre Iguodala, who was doing very well, don't get me wrong, off of Kawhi Leonard, and putting Klay Thompson on him and letting Andre sort of do what he does and let that brain work and great help side defense and let Klay be the on-ball dog. If they don't have that, or if Klay is not 100%, which given how he was limping around after the game, I think he will play because he's Klay Thompson, and I don't understand his physiology. He's somewhere beyond human, but man, that was a tough hamstring pull. Yeah. I mean, and we can argue if he deserved it or not with hunting for the foul or Green bumped into him. That's beside the point. The point is, absolutely on the defensive end, and then on the offensive end, you're right. Everyone knows in the world he can shoot, but Nick Nurse was able to run a box and one for the final 4 minutes of the game because the Warriors didn't have any shooters out there, which is such a weird concept to say out loud, but the Warriors didn't have enough shooting on the floor to where Nick Nurse can run a gimmicky zone, which worked. The Warriors only scored one basket in the final 5:36, and it was Andre Iguodala's three-pointer off of a broken play coming off of a trap when they finally abandoned the zone.
Right.
So Klay Thompson unlocks everything in so many ways. Now, that said, if Kevin Durant decides that he's capable of playing in Game 3, he doesn't need to be 100% to sort of fill a lot of the offensive roles that Klay Thompson would fill. He can kind of go in and just play the Harrison Barnes role, if you remember from a few years back, and hang out in the corner.
Yeah, I remember the missed shots, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that he's going to go at the same clip as Harrison. That's all you really need, right, in that offense.
Right.
And his defensive length will be a big boon because you do trust him as well to switch on to bigger guys. But, yeah, Klay, I mean, Klay was probably not an all-NBA player this year. He thought he deserved to be. I thought he was one of the 6-7 best players in the NBA after the calendar switch from 2019. But he was really bad in 2018, part of the schedule. Klay, let me put it to you this way. If Klay doesn't play in Game 3, you're going to know exactly how valuable Klay Thompson is. Every time he's not out there, they don't look right. They don't look even close to right.
Dieter, when you get into a series, any series, adjustments become important. Obviously, the team that loses, it doesn't take much to get the attention from the coaching staff that, hey, look, we need to adjust. It's the team that wins that sits there, we need to adjust. Yeah, we're good.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
We're all good.
Exactly.
No, we have to make an adjustment. So let's look at Golden State first and then Toronto second. How does Golden State need to adjust in a 1-1? Then how does Toronto need to adjust?
Well, I think that Golden State needs to pick up a lot of the lessons that they learned getting into the second quarter of Game 2, which was Toronto's perimeter defense is absolutely they're just so damn good. I don't think you can beat them. I don't think you can beat Toronto's perimeter defense with Leonard and Green and Pascal Siakam out there, especially if you don't have everybody capable of shooting and putting the ball on the floor, which I just don't think the Warriors have that capability right now. So what they need to start doing is they need to start going to the basket. And they started to do that. Stephen Curry was able to get a little bit of penetration there in the second quarter. It unlocked his game, and I thought it unlocked the Warriors' offense for the first time in a while. And it took, again, Nick Nurse going to a zone defense or a box and one in order to sort of slow it down. For the Raptors, the adjustment, I think you got to keep the ball in Leonard's hands and let him control the pace of the game. Far too often, it seemed like they wanted to run the beautiful stuff, and that's A-OK. A team like Houston. And I know it is an aesthetically unpleasing style of basketball. I think that it's I know every time I'm on, I go in on this. I think it's dangerous for the NBA. But Kawhi Leonard's capable of doing everything James Harden does, and I think a little bit better. And he plays some defense as well, just a little bit. So let your star lead the way. And I know you don't want to put the load entirely on the dude's shoulders because he is nursing some injuries, and Lord knows they did it in the first three rounds of the playoffs. But you brought him in on a one-year deal. If he's a rented donkey, you gotta ride it all the way to the top of the canyon. I don't know what else to do, because every time Leonard has the ball in his hands, the Warriors really struggle. Yeah. They really struggle against that. And if Thompson's out, boy, Leonard could go off for 45 and probably hold everybody on the defensive end to less than 45% shooting, and that's the magic numbers for Toronto.
You're a better defensive player than James Harden is.
Yeah, well, listen, at least I'll stand in front of somebody every now and again, not this Matador Olay stuff.
Well, look, okay, James Harden plays defense because the rules dictate that you do have to go back and do it.
He absolutely would run the 4-on-5 and hang out. And the worst part is he would run the 4-on-5 and not stand under the basket. He'd stand at the 3-point line.
Exactly. In other words, I got to do this till we get the ball back, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go back.
Let me save some energy over here.
Yeah, exactly. One more question. That'll be about Draymond Green. I think it's pretty obvious. Game one, he wasn't that great, but then he got back to playing the way he's played. Is this the best you've seen him? I mean, he's had some really good moments, but is this the best you've seen him because of the circumstances?
Yeah, I mean, it's so hard to stack up where the defense is so spellbinding. It's hard to really put into words what it is he's doing, and you have to watch the film 42 times to understand how brilliant he is. I mean, it's little stuff like footwork where you're like, how do you even know that? That's just like built into the computer. Defensively, he is at the top of his game, and the biggest games will bring out the best in Draymond Green on that end of the court. Going into this, I thought he was absolutely incredible in the Portland series, but that's not right, exactly the cream of the crop there. That was a first-round series that was being played in the third round because of weird scheduling.
Right.
I'll say this. In that year when they went 73-9 in the regular season, there was a stretch when they were – I think they won 20-something consecutive games. Draymond was unbelievable on the offensive end. Teams had not figured out that you cannot trap Steph Curry high. In fact, they kept leaning into it, and Draymond was running that 4-on-3 short roll break like nobody's business.
Right.
And he was knocking down three-pointers. And that team defense, they still had something to prove. They wanted to come out. That, a lot of people thought they were fraudulent champions. I'm not really sure where they were coming from, but they didn't think – there was a narrative that they couldn't do it again.
Right.
And I think that really made Draymond angry, because he had finally achieved what he had wanted in his career, and it was like, I'll show you who's fraudulent. And the team defense during that initial run in the 73-win season was incredible. I do think that is as good as he has been. That said, right now, his ability to – maybe the ceiling's a little bit higher. His ability to ramp it up to the highest level and make just these incredible winning plays in the most needed moments is probably better than it was back then, just because he has the experience, just because he knows himself better. But it's always on. And in game three, no matter who's on the court, Draymond Green is going to have to be the second best player on the Warriors. Durant or Thompson or whatever, it's going to have to be Curry, and it's going to have to be Green, and they're going to have to absolutely beat out a really, really good Raptors team. This thing's got 6-7 written all over it.
Right.
And I think it has a chance, as weird as it has been, I think it has a chance to be an all-time great NBA Finals.
Yeah, because I watched Draymond Green, and I just feel that at both ends of the floor, I just sense his judgment is as good as I've seen it.
No, it's very crisp right now.
I'm just not going to jack up a three, because years ago, I remember the first time they played Cleveland.
Right.
You're like, what are you shooting that shot for? Now he's very. He seems like he's selective. He makes the right pass. He knows where all the chess pieces are on both sides, whether he's playing defense or offense. I mean, that's for most big guys don't know where all the chess pieces are. Most big guys don't even know their chess pieces.
Draymond sees the floor better than any human I've ever seen play the game of basketball. You're going to get me on a roll here, because I hold Draymond Green in the most reverent of tones. Like, he is a genius beyond a genius that in game of basketball. I've never seen anything like it. I think I tweeted out the other day. We're all using the calculator app on our phones while Draymond's quantum computing right. In the game of basketball. I mean, that's the difference between him and everybody else. And you're absolutely right. His decisions have been really crisp. I think the experience and understanding the moment, and I think understanding himself a little bit better. He has been a lot more controlled emotionally. You'll never get a subdued Draymond Green. That's an impossible thing to ask for. But he knows how to handle his emotions a lot better, and I've seen that develop over the course of the last 4 or 5 months. Right. Him better and not... Sometimes you want him flying off the handle because it creates something crazy, but right. It can get loose. And he has been very controlled throughout these entire playoffs. And I would argue, even though he didn't play well in game one, a lot of that was just the Warriors taking stock. And I'm interested to see how the Oracle Arena crowd plays this one in game three, because that can turn that 18-0 run and that, you know, gobsmacking play had at the beginning of third quarter in game two, that could turn it into basically, you know, two straight wins right there.
Yes.
Because you could turn 18-0 into 27-0,
yep.
And the home crowd prevents the opposing team from sort of getting back into it, whereas I thought the Toronto crowd, which was absolutely incredible, as good of an atmosphere as I've been in a long time, the positive reinforcement that they provided the Raptors allowed the Raptors to get back into it and kind of push the Warriors down a little bit. Crowds, as weird as it sounds, and I know we talk about them in either complete hyperbolic tones or completely dismiss them, but I do think they're a big factor in this series.
Yeah, I always feel the factor you talked about. I don't think they affect road teams. That, you know, Now in football, well, this is what I think of football, for example, they affect you trying to call out stuff at the line of scrimmage.
Of course, okay. Yeah.
I always feel in football or basketball, the home team can be lifted by the crowd to get back in it, or they can get the home team into a role in such a way.
Yeah.
Where I just feel like that's where I think they play the biggest role. I think if you're a loser organization, a road crowd's going to kill you. But
yeah. That's absolutely right. And yeah. I think Toronto in the past, and I'm
yes.
interested to see if it's through. Toronto in the past would absolutely do this, but because Kawhi Leonard doesn't have human emotions, I do think that there's a level of this not being that much of an issue. Like, for some reason, it's just like all you have to do is look at this guy who's completely unfazed by everything. I mean, aliens could show up on Earth and he would just be like, hey, how's it going?
We got a game tonight at 7. Want to come by?
Yeah. He probably kicked their ass, too. It's changed the entire organization.
Yeah.
I mean, it's changed the entire organization. You can see it. Kyle Lowry isn't clenching up like he used
because
to.
Because they don't panic because of him.
Exactly.
He doesn't panic. They
exactly.
don't panic.
Exactly. So it'll be interesting to see if you get into a real cauldron, a cauldron that I don't think that they have been in yet, or theoretically
right.
that they haven't been in yet.
Mm-hmm.
If some of that starts to come back, or if Kawhi's influence is so strong that it's not a thing. And that'll be really interesting for me to see on Wednesday.
This is fun. I enjoyed it, Dieter, as always. Hey,
anytime.
Great to have you on board. That was great. Thanks so much. Look, enjoy it.
Will do. Let's do it again.
Kevin Franzen, next half hour here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Get into a little Phillies talk now with Kevin Franzen. Kevin, welcome back to the show. Great to have you with us.
Well, I'm glad I made it for the second time through here. I feel honored.
Well, look, I mean, obviously you knocked it out of the park the first time. The versatility was incredible. We'll see how this one goes as to whether you get the privileged third callback. I know you'll be pacing until you find out. So.
Well, I mean, it's always a good thing when someone returns, you know, just to, and says, "Hey, would you want to come back on?" You're like, "Okay, I'm good.
Yeah,
I'll entertain. Yeah, that, here we go."
That's how I feel. Let's talk about. Let's start with Jay Bruce. They make the deal. Jake Schiener is a decent prospect. One out of every three hits he gets is an extra base hit, but he's not going to crack that lineup. What can Jay Bruce do immediately to help this lineup, in your opinion?
You know, I think we're going to probably see it in the next, probably today. And he played pretty much a full game yesterday after the Andrew McCutchen injury. So what did he bring? He brings a lethal bat, and the way he was going about things this year, yeah, he wasn't hitting, just getting hits. He had 10 base hits. What was it, like close to 24, 25 extra base hits?
Yeah, 25.
That's a big thing for this lineup. So when you look at the left-handed power that he has, you know it plays great at Citizens Bank Park. He's had good numbers over his career at Citizens Bank Park. But it's a presence in the lineup. It's a presence in off the bench. If that were to be the case, if Andrew McCutchen will come back soon, we don't know anything yet. It's someone that you look at going, okay, I have someone coming off the bench that could, he could win a game for me, and he could lose a ball in the seats, and you know what, he might strike out here and there, but he's a pro. We all know that. He's a really good clubhouse guy. Guys love him everywhere he's been. And so I'm excited to see how he meshes in the next couple of weeks with this team, and hopefully some good news out of the Andrew McCutchen camp, but we just don't know yet. And, you know, that's going to be here nor there. Jay Bruce is here, and he's going to produce.
To me, he's a launch angle guy. I mean, he had 35 hits coming in, whatever the number was, 25 were extra base hits out of 35. He's a launch angle guy.
I mean, yeah, sure. He's a high line drive guy. I mean, launch angle, high line drive guy, he's a guy that has pop. I mean, the launch angle thing is just to, you know, for people to look at and just say, oh, wow, it goes here and there. It's a high line drive.
So it's not
a big deal. I mean, he's a guy that produces. That's ultimately what it comes down to. He's been a guy that's produced his entire career. He had a little blip last year when he got over to New York. Wasn't great at all, but we'll see. We will see. And I like his numbers at Citizens Bank more towards like a Cincinnati, because it's very similar ballparks, and I think that plays pretty well.
Yeah, no doubt. What gives you longevity, you know more than anybody, what gives you longevity is the ability to adjust. Is that fair? I mean, you know, you do something,
they
adjust to you, adjust back. Have you seen Scott King readjust?
Absolutely. He's more aggressive. And number one, look, there's a lot of us that don't mind hitting with two strikes, but it's not ideal. And last year, it felt like every single at-bat of Scott Kingery he was taking and getting to 0-2 every single time. Now, I know it wasn't, but that's what the feeling was. And if you think that, what do you think the player's thinking?
Right.
Guaranteed, he's in the batter's box going, again? So him being aggressive in the zone, I think, is a huge thing. I still think there's more to him. Look, I'm not looking for him to be a slap hitter the other way. He could drive a ball in the gap the other way. He could drive a ball down the line. We saw in Tampa, one of the hardest places to hit in all of spring training, right field at Yankees, you know, Legends Field in Tampa, Florida. He had two outs there this year. And to me, that's the untapped source still. If he starts taking some balls to right center, keeping everyone kind of honest, especially the outfielders, instead of maybe playing a little bit shaded towards the pole side, you have a guy that really is, he is damn good. I'm sorry, but he is damn good. And I'm excited to see it. And not only that, he's making adjustments on the run, literally on the run as a center fielder or third baseman. He had a great game last night defensively at third base. But again, his spot is, first and foremost, his spot is at second base. Whenever the time may be, and they allow him to be a second baseman, he is going to be phenomenal over there.
Yeah, just one quick footnote. I've seen the Tampa Stadium next to, it's right next to where the Bucks play, because that's where the Outback Bowls played. And you have to drive the ball to get that ball over the fence where you hit it.
You have to crush it. Oh, it's got to be crushed.
Yes.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, so the Bryce Harper part of it. Okay, I want to get into two parts of it. What has Harper's presence meant as a domino for other hitters in the lineup? And then the second part is what does Bryce now have to do to make himself more productive and not just a domino?
Well, let's go with what it's done to the lineup. And you know, I think ultimately you have a lot of teams that are still pitching to Gene Segura. Right, I mean, and right now him going through the slump that he is a little surprising to me, because teams are still challenging him. Right, pitches that he's been able to handle pretty much his entire career, he's not hitting. He's doing that. That's because of Bryce's presence. They want him to beat you, not Bryce. And when it comes to Reese Hoskins, he's gotten better pitches to hit. The domino effect ultimately has come down to this: teams have walked him a lot in the past, and we've seen it firsthand, and guys have had, you know, behind him have had pretty up and down years, you know, with the Nationals. He has guys behind him now that combined 21 homers, 22 homers now, sorry, with JT and him and Reese. They got 77 RBIs, and that to me is a huge thing. So as much as Bryce goes, right, when he gets going and gets hot, that is only going to make those guys better, because A, he's on the bases all the time. He's going to score a lot of runs. They're going to want to produce even more. And, you know, that's the domino effect there. Now, for Bryce to produce, that's a very loaded question, because when I look at Bryce, and I understand people are going to look at the contract and everything, but he has 43 RBIs. He leads the team in RBIs.
I know.
You know, he is second in the league in doubles. He has struck out a lot this year. But there's one thing that I've, you know, knowing Bryce as much as I do and talking hitting with him and stuff, there are adjustments being made, and they're being made a lot. And for me, more than anything, we're seeing him start taking the balls to the left, and it's just a matter of time before that starts clicking every single day, and then it just it's go time. And it means, you know, there's going to be a lot of home runs, and, you know, I'm not thinking he's going to hit 345 like he did in 15, but he is a better hitter than what he's shown. But with that being said, he is still being productive. And so I find that to be a loaded question on it, because so many people are like, oh, he's not that productive. It's like,
this game's about scoring runs and driving in runs.
Yep.
Okay, it's scoring runs and driving in runs. Well, last I checked, he fulfills the two biggest boxes I need to check. That's how I look at it.
Yeah, when you have basically 80 runs combined between those two already, and we're, you know, just a couple games into June. He's been everything that he's needed to be. Now, does that mean that that he's hit the ceiling? No. There's still so much growth with him. He's 26 years old. I mean, we're seeing, like, the way Bryce is right now, you're seeing so many guys that are making their, like, what, big league debuts and second year in the league, maybe third year in the league, and you know, he's 7-8 years already. So you're just going, okay, at some point we're going to see this back to normal. You know, the back of the baseball card, I feel like, always comes back. And here it is. Here's that moment where it, you know, maybe not walked as much as he's wanted to in the last couple of weeks, but what he has done has been more aggressive in the zone.
Yeah.
And that to me is going to be the biggest thing with Bryce is finding that hot streak, sticking with that hot streak, and the guys behind him, you know, in that domino effect, continuing to hammer balls. Because if they hammer balls, teams are still going to go after Bryce. But if they can't, if Reese goes in an extended slump, or JT goes in an extended slump, or if they do it together, then that's where the problem will be.
Yeah. Yeah, because there are players that were drafted last night in the first round of the MLB draft that are college players that might not make their debuts until they're 26. So I mean,
that's
a perspective that lets everybody know where this guy is as the quote grizzled veteran of 26.
Yeah,
you talked about talking hitting with him, Kevin. I remember years ago. It's a long time ago. Hawk Harrelson was the analyst for the Red Sox, and Jim Rice.
What about the board?
Indeed. And Jim Rice, who ended up in the Hall of Fame, was on the Red Sox at the time, and he always talked about how he loved to talk hitting with Jim Rice. When you talk hitting with Bryce Harper, what's that experience like for you and getting his responses on hitting?
Well, I mean, his response is mostly, we just talk more like the mental side. And his, like, so there's one thing that he does that is extraordinary, and it's understanding the strike zone. You look at most of the stuff that he complains about, they're really balls, you know? So that's number one. You know, I let's just say I've had some pretty long conversations in the past with Barry Bonds, and to me, he's the greatest hitter I've ever seen and will ever see, no doubt. And, you know, so conversations with Bonds and conversations with Bryce, completely different. You know, with Bryce, it's just trying to, I think more than anything, it's always a search, right? And there's always a search. And with Bonds, it wasn't a search. It was already a, like, I know my plan better than anyone. I execute my plan better than anyone. And, oh, by the way, I'm better than everyone. You know, that was part of the whole bravado, the whole thing. But with Bryce, there's, like, just the understanding of who teams are, who he's facing, what they like to do in the past. But he's kind of adjusting now a little bit more, is that he's got Reese behind him. This is the first time. And I think on your show I said it. I'm like, for the first – he had really, really, really good hitters behind him. Hitters.
Yeah.
In Washington. He never had the power threat behind him. And Reese is that power threat. So there's an adjustment being made right now against, you know, for Bryce. I think, personally, that we've talked about, that just, you know, teams are kind of coming after him because they know the guy behind him is still a threat. So that's playing a part of this whole thing, too. And it's interesting to see really how Bryce is adjusting to it. Is he adjusting? Yes. Is it slow at times? Yes, because that's hitting. That's the beauty of hitting in general. So there's always going to be, you know, adjustments made, and you hope that more the merrier in the positive way.
How do you feel about the pitching so far?
That's another loaded question. Thanks, appreciate it.
Excuse me, this is what I do. I just load them up and just have you go.
Well, okay, so it's so inconsistent because, and I think like the Jake Arrieta stuff is like the most telling of our, like, the entire rotation, right? You have that one great start, another great start, and then we see
he always gives you that okay here we go feeling. He always gives you that here we go feeling. Okay, here we go. And then you're like, and then all of a sudden you stop.
Yep, I agree. And then you have like the Pavetta thing. So Pavetta against the Cardinals. Yeah. Right. You know, he showed me a lot the last four innings. The first inning I was like, oh man, same old guy. Then against the Dodgers, he shows me six innings of like, what is this? Like, where has this been?
Yeah.
You know, and so that inconsistency, along with the Aaron Nola stuff, which I sit there and I mean, I'm not the only one because I'm the pitching coaches and everyone involved in this are just trying to figure it out. His velocity is up. It's not like his arm's hurting. You know, curveball location, not very good. Very inconsistent. That's a pitch that he's been able to go to. Last night was like one of the first changeups that he's hung, and he did to Naylor, the pinch hitter that drove in two. That was actually a big play of the game for me. He hung a changeup, and that changeup has been money all year. A little disappointed that he hasn't used it as much as he has, because he's after last night, I think he's at 35-36% use of his curveball. So with that being said, there's still room, right? There's still a half game up on Atlanta. And that's still a scary thought because you're going, they just, you know, Atlanta's made this run of late because they weren't very good. They were injured. Yeah. They were doing all that. And now we're seeing them play well. And it's like, hey, boys, we got to get going.
Yeah.
Got to show a little bit of urgency soon, and you know, it starts tonight. It really does start tonight because you have to get back out on there without one of your horses, and that being Andrew McCutchen, right. And hopefully we get good prognosis out of this today.
Yeah, because I mean, I look at what Nola's done. I mean, the problem to me is I'm looking at more hits than innings pitched. Strikeout to walk ratio
that goes on with the location part. So last year we saw a lot of his misses. Just if they missed, it was barely off the plate. If he missed, it was the same side as where, you know, Jorge Alfaro, Andrew Knapp were setting up. This year with JT Realmuto, and it's not JT Realmuto, he's calling the pitches. The next thing you know, he's going down and away, it misses up and in, and it's hammer time. And we're like, oh gosh, So it's the big misses this year that are baffling. Right, I mean, because he's usually pinpoint control. So I want to err on the side of caution with it because you're going, okay, it's Aaron Nola, but at the same time, we're in June, and you would think that back-to-back starts are going to come at some point, and they haven't yet.
Okay, so the next time you're on will be your third time. This time, I'll have you ask me loaded questions, and I'll answer them.
Okay, that sounds good. I'm good.
I mean, I think it's a fair deal. I mean, I think it's a fair deal.
Well, I mean, like, if I were to ask you, how was your day? Is that a loaded question? Because it could be. You never know. I can catch you on the right day.
It could be. Today, I could handle with complete ease.
Well, I'm glad. I am glad on that one.
You want to know why? Because we had you on the show. Hey,
appreciate
so much. You're terrific. We always have a good time every time we talk. Thanks, Kev. Look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Kevin Franzen, awesome. We will come back, wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. By the way, Dick Girardi is going to be on the show with us later in the week to talk about the Belmont Stakes. And so that will come up later in the week. Looking forward to that. Also, Andy Kahn is going to join us from MLive.com later in the week about Juwan Howard taking over at Michigan. Maddie, great to have you back on the show.
Absolutely. Always a pleasure.
Phillies and Padres will be in this spot tomorrow. James Holzhauer, done on Jeopardy, gone. 27-year-old from the University of Chicago. She beat him to end his streak. I know the suit had signed up to be on Jeopardy. And when he found out that not all the questions were about IndyCar, he pulled out. All right. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors.